Last year, Adam and I and a few hundred friends of DeSoto gathered in the Masonic Lodge inside a cemetery in the heart of Hollywood. Were we there to practice some dark rite? Some sinister ritual designed to bring deceased Star Trek actors back to the plane of the living? To bring an unholy horde of undead nerd celebrities to Earth to consume the brains of the living? No, we were just doing our live show of the Share Your Embarrassment Tour. It's our review of Star Trek V, and we filmed it. We just wanted to let you know to get ready for that live stream announcement coming next week. If you're a Max Fun member and you support our shows, you'll get access to discounted tickets from membership at MaximumFun.org. So, good time to make sure those emails are delivering properly to your inbox. Either way, we'll be announcing ticket links soon here and on our mailing list that you can sign up for at podshop.biz. The Share Your Embarrassment Tour is coming to your living room for one last stop, and you're not going to want to miss it.
Captain?
Not here.
Captain?
Report.
Signatures detected.
Shields up.
Signatures detected.
Red alert.
Context Starfleet Command.
What's happening?
Context Starfleet Command.
Delay that order.
Context Starfleet Command.
This is the captain.
Context Starfleet Command.
Get out of my chair. Chair.
We have engaged the Klingons.
Klingons?
Welcome to The Greatest Discovery. It's a Star Trek Discovery podcast from the makers of The Greatest Generation. I'm Adam Pranica.
I'm Ben Harrison.
Ben, today we are talking about the third Short Treks episode, the third of four.
Yeah, and I think a very unusual Greatest Discovery episode in that we are in the same room at the same time.
Yeah.
Has that ever happened for Discovery?
I don't think so. Yeah, we're in the immediate aftermath of our December LA Greatest Gen Con tour.
Yeah. I thought I'd go on a rant for a second about how bad CBS All Access is as a thing.
Oh, yeah. It's been a long time since we've gotten one of those.
I mean, I know that, like, season two is coming up and we'd love some advertising money or whatever, but, like,
are you about to rail again, beloved corporate entity CBS All Access? A thing that Star Trek fans love?
The fucking interface is trash.
Yeah.
Like, it is so bad. Just now, I had the episode we watched open, and I wanted to pause it and just like have it ready in the browser in case I wanted to scrub around and look at something while we're talking about it. It when you pause it in the browser, it takes the entire frame and puts it into a tiny little thumbnail down in the corner so that you can look at the CBS All Access logo where you would normally just see the paused image of the show you were trying to watch. That is so stupid.
Is it trying to allow you to watch multiple CBS programs and pause them at the same time? Like, what? Why would they even do that?
I think they just really want to beat you over the head with the logo of this garbage software that they have.
Yeah, that's not great. I think one of the funniest parts of using the app and the interface is that it alphabetizes all of the programming available there, which makes After Trek elevated into like the top line of all programming available.
It's like the third most important program that CBS has.
Yeah, I don't think alphabetical is the way to sort
no.
everything available there.
Yeah. Also, just like searching it was really annoying. I clicked on Star Trek Discovery and Short Treks wasn't even visible on that list. And then I had to hunt to find it. And at one point, I even searched for Short Treks and was like, uh-oh, your search didn't return any results. We have no idea what you're talking about.
Well, I think one thing that's clear is that they're spending all of their budget on the production of a few of these shows. And I think this Short Treks is emblematic of where they're deciding to put their resources.
I withdraw my criticisms. I think that I'd much rather you spend your money on good programming than good software.
We need some people out there painting the sand red.
Yeah. We're painting the sand grains red. We're painting the sand grains red.
It's just 50-gallon drums of paprika sprinkled and mixed.
I don't think that we had any idea what to expect budget-wise from these Short Treks, and that has been super impressive.
Yeah.
And this episode is no exception to that. Do you want to get into it, Adam?
Yeah, let's do it. It's like already the third out of four, right?
Yeah.
The penultimate Short Treks, as it turns out. It's Short Treks 3, and it's called The Brightest Star. It takes us off of the Discovery ship for once and plants us onto Kaminar, Ben.
Yeah, this is Saru's home world. If you were wondering why they're called Kelpians, the opening shots are of them harvesting kelp, literally.
I wonder if we'll ever get like a Klingon origin story where we see the Klingons just wiping butts.
I mean, they had to be conscious of this, right?
Yeah.
It's very embarrassing.
Yeah.
Oh, man. Yeah. I think we've speculated a little bit about what it's like for Saru to, you know, be where he's from and what his homeworld is like, because he's painted a picture that makes it sound like a real hellscape, you know, that his people, you know, were designed to sense the coming of death or whatever.
A hellscape that he nevertheless misses and, like, grieves the absence of, as we know him on the show.
Yeah. It has been interesting to picture, like, what that meant.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I was, when we were firing up the episode, thinking, oh, maybe this is going to be some shit where he's always running from, like, giant fanged beasties. And that's not quite what it is. They have, like, kind of a fishing village type of setup. And I mean, like, one of the things that they obviously spent a ton of money on is like traveling to wherever they shot this. It's shot on in a beautiful, like, on location.
Doesn't look like Toronto to me.
No. I suppose it could be like Vancouver-y kind of area.
Yeah.
I don't know. Hard to say. Wherever they shot it, they did a great job.
Yeah. As the Kelpians harvest kelp, so too are the Kelpians themselves harvested by this invisible alien race.
Yeah, there's kind of a floating obelisk, upside down obelisk in the on the beach in their village, and at night it like gobbles people up, right?
Yeah, I mean, people who have marched to it of their own volition and are awaiting what it does. I suppose we should mention, too, like, the format of this story is sort of told in kind of a log kind of way or via conversation and voiceover.
Yeah, it's a reminiscence of Saru's in voiceover at the beginning. And
it's never clear who he's talking to or if it's just a diary.
Yeah, he's talking to us. His father is a religious leader and part of the Kelpian religious belief, it, you know, allows for them to like self-sacrifice for the Ba'ul, who are some off-world alien race that I guess eat them.
Yeah, much is made of the balance and the need to maintain that balance. Unclear what the Ba'ul's half of this is, like what their contribution to the deal might be at this point.
For livestock,
maybe they provide them nets to catch all the kelp. Like,
enjoy it. For livestock, the Kelpians are real scrawny, generally speaking.
Yeah,
like Saru's dad is the only one that's really got any meat on his bones.
Yeah,
and he's like older and probably pretty stringy at this point. So
I wonder if when you eat a Kelpian, all you do is eat their ganglia and you just throw the rest away.
Oh man, it's like a it's like saffron. There's like a very small amount of it per plant.
Yeah.
It's so delicious. It's worth the expense.
We should mention at our live show in LA, someone gave us a really thoughtful, cool gift. Some people made candy in the shape of threat ganglia.
Yeah.
And they're really delicious.
They're like champagne flavored threat ganglia candies.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow. Really cool.
Saru has always been Saru.
Yeah.
And by that I mean kind of contrarian and always asking annoying questions and kind of never letting anyone just like do the thing that they wanted to. So like The form that takes in this past context is that he's like, you know, in his little hut with his dad and his sister, and he's like, hey, why do we like, why do we accept this terrible situation as just our lot in life?
Yeah.
His dad is like a priest, so he's pretty bought into the whole this is the way it is situation.
Saru is under the thumb of kind of a double-barreled authority figure, one that is both his father and a priest.
Yeah.
And that's got to be hard.
And like his sister is like a bit of a trope, like the go along to get along.
Mm-hmm.
You know, she loves him but doesn't understand him kind of a thing.
There's kind of an inciting incident. Like Saru, by all appearances, has always asked annoying questions.
Yeah.
Even in the context of these sacrifices that happen regularly. But a piece of the ship falls off. The ship that gathers the Kelpians is evidently a little bit of a jalopy.
Yeah, and we never see the Ba'ul ship.
Right.
It's we see their obelisk and we see the light when the Kelpians that are being sacrificed get, like Saru's dad like leads about 10 Kelpians out and they stand in a circle around this obelisk and then the light bursts on them and we are left to imagine what horrors are visited upon them after that. The dad like comes home from a long day of sacrificing his own people and drops like a lunchbox off in the corner of the room and Saru's like, what's that? What are we talking about here? And the dad is like, oh yeah, that fell off the ship. So
I'm gonna wrap it in a knit J. Crew sweater and stick it under the bed before it's disposed of.
Saru's job is to go destroy this thing, but instead he kind of gets to working on it and wrenching on it with a weird like Little Mermaid style set of tools. Like all the tools look like they grew under the sea. And he actually gets it working, right? Like he starts like transmitting and it's just kind of like calling out into the void because he doesn't like.
Yeah, there's no like instantaneous pinging or anything. It's something that he kind of babysits for a while. He checks on it from time to time.
Well, and he doesn't even understand like anything about where he lives or how like the cosmology of the universe works.
Yeah.
The sky is just a place where death comes from to his people. And some of his genius is in just realizing that there might be something past that.
Yeah.
And the idea is that like, they're a pretty primitive society that's being kept fairly primitive by the religion that everybody believes. And presumably the Ba'ul have some hand in maintaining that.
It's a conflict that really had me wondering who were the real bad guys of this story. Like, it seems like the power structure in place on the planet is the greater threat than even the Ba'ul. And like Saru gets more and more curious about their circumstances and asks questions that probe deeper into like the reasons that things are the way they are.
Yeah.
And his father responds not as a father but as a priest, and like his father as that priest is complicit in this entire way of living. And
I know, yeah,
it made me wonder, like, is that because he knows he'll be spared? He's the guy that is frequently walking people down to the circle, but he's never in the circle himself. Like, he has every reason to maintain the order of things and to never question why things are the way they are.
I mean, he seems pretty content with the idea that Saru could get picked, and it's a little obscure exactly what that means. I didn't think it really unpacked exactly how you're selected for sacrifice, but it seems like, you know, their belief system is basically like if you get sacrificed, it's great because everybody's terrified all the time. And then we've heard Saru talk about that, like the idea of just being in constant existential fear.
Yeah.
And
that question seems to be the last straw, though, when he asks his dad what he would do if he got the death lottery. And his dad's like, cool, that'd be great. You should feel honored by the potential of that.
I got pangs of wishing that this was the premise of a TNG episode. Like, what if they met an intelligent species and then found out that there's another intelligent species that like puts a religion on them and is actually just cultivating them as livestock and eating them.
Yeah.
But like then discovered that that other species like cannot survive without the arrangement as it is. Like how do you solve that moral puzzle? Or like, is it even any of your business? Like, you know, that's a that would be a real fun thing to see Picard sink his teeth into.
This definitely feels like 10 pounds of Trek in a 5-pound bag, you know?
Yeah, and fun that it is like so little Starfleet initially.
Yeah,
Saru eventually does get a response, and I really liked this scene. The idea is that he sends out his signal and then waits and waits and waits to hear back. And he's like heavily modified this piece of technology that fell off the Ba'ul ship. So
it's full of bones and seawater.
Yeah. He's kind of the like Gilligan's Island level technologist. we see him copying something down from the screen after having received a response of hello. And he's copied down the letters that spell out today. But I really liked that he was writing it right to left.
Yeah.
Like he doesn't actually know how English works yet.
I like those cultural differences that they show here. I also really like how we see the Kelpian floss walk, you know, there's that top down shot on the top of the mountain. Like they're calling back the hooves.
Yeah.
And stuff like it's nice to see all those little details again.
Yeah. Well, he and his sister are like walking after he gets this message kind of late at night in the forest around where their fishing village is. And they're both freaking out because they're like far from home. And that kind of flies in the face of their instincts. And,
it sure seems like all anyone wants to talk about is their relativity to danger or safety.
Yeah.
If you're a Kelpian, right?
I think his sister, like her performance is definitely like, I understand that I am kind of saying goodbye, even though we're not saying we're saying goodbye.
Yeah. There's that like pregnancy to the moment that neither of them address directly.
And she gives him a knife to take with him.
Renee blooming flowers.
And then we see him kind of up on the top of the hill up above the village, and a familiar kind of previa appears in the sky overhead and sets down right in front of him. And he gets a visit from a fairly familiar extraterrestrial.
Yeah, it's Mirror Universe Georgiou, and she kills him on the spot.
She licks her sword. She says, wow, these ganglia are pretty good. I think I could actually like make a good amount of money off selling these as food.
Georgiou is a lieutenant at this point and appears to be a little bit of a tryhard. And she's on her own.
Yeah.
She's taken a shuttle. She's gone to the Kelpian homeworld. Of her own volition, it seems.
And that's another part of this that is like the 10 pounds of Trek.
Mm-hmm.
Like, so much, you can get so much out of this if you've watched a lot of Star Trek.
Yeah.
Like, knowing the issues of Prime Directive and First Contact as they stand in TNG and stuff.
Yeah.
Like, knowing, like, how far outside the norm this is, because... and it kind of reminds me of like the episode of TNG Pen Pals, where Data meets kind of a pre-warp person.
Where Data meets Nikki Cox. We all meet Nikki Cox that episode.
Yeah. Similar weird fingers.
Yeah.
But I guess Georgiou actually like went through proper channels and got permission to go pick Saru up, or at least give him the opportunity to like... make a choice about being picked up. And like she comes down in this shuttle. It says SHN on the front, which I took to mean it is a Shenzhou shuttle.
Yeah, I took that to mean the same thing. It sure does place the Shenzhou in time in a way that underscores what a piece of shit it was when it was introduced to us on Star Trek Discovery.
Yeah,
like it was always mentioned
later
that it was a super old ship.
I think it's really interesting, the idea that Giorgio like worked her way up on that ship, and the idea that like
she's got the Will Riker career path going.
But also like the two top officers on that ship when we are introduced are like came to her in really weird ways.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that's fun backstory as well. I mean, she's basically saying to him, hey, like you are, as far as we can tell, really different from all of the other people on your planet in that you, you know, had no foreknowledge of technology or other species outside of your own and the Ba'ul, but you figured out how to make a transmitter out of that thing, and I've got special dispensation to offer you a trip off world, but it comes with a caveat.
It's a one-way trip.
Yeah. I was like, man, if I was Saru and I knew that, like, and like I'm standing here finding out that, oh yeah, like there's just an alien species that's harvesting us, and it's like a totally rapacious practice that puts my species entirely in the victim category, I'd be like, yeah, I'll take your one-way trip, and then I will work tirelessly behind the scenes to like engineer an assault on the Ba'ul that right. You know, stops this practice forever or whatever. Like it's weird. That's like the thing that I really wish they could have found a way to get into this episode, is like something about what Starfleet's position on the Ba'ul harvesting these people is.
I didn't stop to consider that, I think, because my mind was so focused on what was allegorical about this story, in that, like, I think the dream is to be discovered, to have your unique skills recognized and appreciated, so that you can
getting plucked from obscurity.
Yeah, and like there's something extremely hopeful and great about the idea of it, but at the same time, I was going to save this for the did you like the episode portion of it, but
that could be this portion.
It goes just as well right here.
Adam, did you like the episode?
Star Trek has at times done a poor job in looking at the present and in judgment. But I think this episode does a pretty good job at describing a people who have both feet in the past and are unwilling to grasp the potential of their circumstances, unable to confront large questions.
Mm-hmm.
In an effort to better their circumstances. And that question that you asked a little while ago about, like, would, if you were offered the choice, would you take Giorgio up on it? I mean, to me, it's like, would you stay on an Earth that is content to slowly boil and die of cancer or Alzheimer's or whatever other malady? Are you content to remain in a place that rejects science and reason as much as society does today? Or would you punch your ticket and take that one-way trip? And it was all I could think about at the end of this ep. Like, it did a really great job in placing the viewer in Saru's position.
Mm-hmm.
And his choice is to seek the unknown, is to like walk toward fear, as he says. And I think it was a great moment to see him, you know, after a very quick pause, step forward.
But in that pause, like, you do feel the pain of leaving family behind that is inherent in that decision. And I thought that was really great too.
Like, it wasn't easy.
His dad is not like a great dude that he seems to be like super close with, but he's close with his sister, and I think he loves his family. And it's not a snap decision for him to be like, yeah, never see them again. Cool. In.
It's clear that he's powerless to change the circumstances there, so the only choice is to leave.
Yeah.
You liked the ep, Ben?
I did. I think it does what you say, like, And that, you know, Trek at its best does this, is it provides like a metaphorical thought experiment to ponder our own circumstances from a different angle. And, you know, some of the language in this is like fairly freighted now just because of like contemporary political discourse. Like the idea of hope versus fear is like the main thematic tension that he keeps coming back to in his voiceovers. And that is 100% like...
It's very au courant.
Yeah, it feels very au courant in my mind. And I don't know, like, you know, absent political usages of those terms, would it stand out to me in that way or not? But I didn't feel like it was didactic or heavy-handed in its usage of those terms, and it felt like honest uses of those terms and not using them to kind of dog whistle a political agenda.
I feel the same way. It was so well done. Those themes were presented in a really in a better than Trek usually does kind of way.
Yeah, so I thought it was great. I mean, I think that like the Kelpians themselves, I don't think are that well designed as a livestock species. Like if we're thinking about what something would look like that you eat, like, I don't think the Kelpians look like that. And I'm not, you know, since we don't see what the Ba'ul look like, I feel like it's forgivable, but also Saru is, you know, played by Doug Jones, a man who is preposterously skinny. And they cast his sister to be a very skinny person. And I think all the other extras are just like a normal amount of skinny, like for TV people, like probably so like skinnier than average people, but not like breathtakingly skinny the way Doug Jones is.
Right.
So like they just looked weird to me. Like, I think the way the makeup moves on his face is designed for how gaunt he is. And when you put that on somebody that has a little bit more meat on their bones, it just looks different and weird.
And Doug Jones is so expertly expressive that it really makes you appreciate how great of an actor he is when sharing scenes with people wearing similar makeup.
Yeah.
When it's more difficult for other actors to pull that off.
Yeah. He has figured some things out about, you know, like how the mouth opening can be manipulated and, you know, how he like tilts his head and stuff that feel like they are that species, but some of the other actors weren't mimicking those choices.
Yeah, it's part of what makes him great. I mean, this isn't throwing shade on other actors. It's just like Doug Jones is real good.
He's real good at this.
Yeah.
We're lucky to have him. Well, do you want to check and see if we have any Priority One messages?
Oh, yeah.
Priority One message from Starfleet coming in on secured channel.
Ben, our first Priority One message is of a personal nature. It is from Mike and Mock. And it is for you and me, and the special request is for this to be in a This Old Enterprise voice.
Okay. I think we can provide that.
The message goes like this. Now, when you're cleaning up the upper decker left by a Krista shrimp colga, you're going to want to use the following materials. A pair of stainless steel tongs, some heavy-duty elbow-length rubber gloves, 250 quarts of maximum strength bleach, and a restroom out-of-order sign. If no solid loafs, you might want to call a master plumber. Happy cleaning.
I think we've met the entire Mike Mock Colgar contingent now.
Yeah.
They've all been to live shows.
Yep.
Who was it? Treegar that was at
LA Sam show? Treegar, right?
Yeah. He's one of those, right?
Yeah, he is.
Yeah.
We've seen him a couple times.
Yeah. That was really fun. We have another Priority One message here from Section 31, and it is to, speaking of live shows, it is to the DC Greatest Gen Con audience. It goes like this. To everyone at the DC show who laughed at our P1 that references SCIFs, SF-86s, and TSSCI, thank you. Crewman Daniels will be contacting you to schedule the panel interview. Please remember to note any recent off-world travel on your EQIP, and that temporal agent 1811 positions are ineligible for the TSP program. Good luck.
I was going to say that they would be ineligible.
Yeah, yeah.
I think everyone knows that.
Yeah, you have to read the fine print on right. On these things. Well, thanks to everyone who sent a P1 on today's episode. We really appreciate that. Those help us keep this show going in the off season. If you would like to send a Priority One message, you go to MaximumFun.org/Jumbotron. It's $100 for a personal message and $200 for a commercial message. And they are a great way to support the production of The Greatest Discovery.
We do an embarrassing Star Trek podcast, and a big part of our success is owning that, being ourselves in all our embarrassing glory. But what if we didn't? What if we were just a Star Trek podcast? No embarrassment, no comedy, just Star Trek podcast. If you're somebody who wants a website, you could go generic and bland and one-size-fits-all on a social media platform, or you could buy a custom URL and design a custom website with Squarespace. Squarespace is the all-in-one platform for all kinds of people to stand out and succeed online. Squarespace makes it easy to create a beautiful website, engage with your audience, and sell anything from products to content to time, all in one place, all on your terms. So whoever you are, or whatever you're trying to do, own it with Squarespace. Go to squarespace.com for a free trial. And when you're ready to launch, go to squarespace.com/trek to save 10% off your first purchase of a website or domain.
It's Webby season. Hi, I'm Sequoia Holmes, host of the Black People Love Paramore podcast. And we are nominated for a Webby for the episode where I interviewed Hayley Williams. In case you're unfamiliar, Black People Love Paramore is a podcast delving into the common and uncommon interests of Black people in order to help us feel more seen. We would love your vote to help us win this Webby. Please take a second, go over to the Black People Love Paramore podcast social media accounts, and you can find them at BPLPpod across all social media platforms. Hit the link in bio and vote for Black People Love Paramore.
Hi, I'm Travis McElroy.
And I'm Teresa McElroy.
And we're the host of Schmanners.
We don't believe that etiquette should be used to judge other people.
No, on Schmanners, we see etiquette as a way to navigate social situations with confidence.
So if that sounds like something you're into,
join us every Friday on Maximum Fun, wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, Ben.
What's that, Adam?
Did you find yourself a short Shimoda?
Drunk Shimoda! I'm going to give it to Giorgio for having the weird strategy for cultivating a bridge staff on her, you know, on the command that she will ultimately get. I think that she meets Michael Burnham way later than this, right? Like, she's already captain of the Shenzo when Michael Burnham comes aboard.
Mm-hmm.
So it's got to feel weird for Saru to be like, well, why are you sliding her in, like, above me?
Yeah.
But yeah, like, it seems like she has some kind of special privilege within Starfleet to be able to, like, A, go just, like, pluck somebody off of a pre-warp planet and be like, hey, you got a job now, buddy. And B, like, do the same thing later with Michael Burnham. Like, that makes me so curious about everybody that works on that Shenzo bridge in the first... Like, I want short treks about all of them now, because I'm very curious about how they all got there. Did you have a drunk Shimoda, Adam?
Yeah, like, the idea of Ship of Orphans, I think, is pretty neat. My Shimoda is also Giorgio, but for different reasons. I feel like First Contact is a job for someone who is not just a lieutenant.
Yeah.
I thought it was amazing that she went down alone. Not knowing really anything about the Kelpians.
I wondered about that. I wondered if they had communicated more than was shown.
Yeah.
Because we see the words hello and today, and that's mm-hmm. it. So you could interpret it as like they got the words hello, and they sent hello back, and then they're like, we got to go get that guy.
There weren't enough characters to write boobless. Yeah, I mean, there's a lot about Giorgio's mission here that I think is Shimoda-esque. Like, there's a there's a confidence in the face of not really knowing anything about what you're getting into.
Yeah.
I think that is in the spirit of that character.
Yeah. She's fuck it, hold my beer captain of this era.
I love it. Great to see her too. It was a nice surprise.
Yeah. Yeah. A good twist. Well, Adam, that will do it for this episode of The Greatest Discovery. I think we're going to be back next time finishing up that comic book, right?
That's right, yeah.
So if you want to check out the 2018 Star Trek Discovery Annual, we will be finishing our coverage of that up next episode, which comes out in a couple of weeks.
Yeah.
And there's one more Short Trek on the horizon.
Yeah, 2 weeks after that, back with Short Trek's number 4.
Yeah, so, and then once that's done, I think we're really close to the new season starting.
Yeah, a season which just announced an extra episode, so it's not going to be 13 eps, it's going to be 14.
Whoa. Is that going to be a problem for us schedule-wise?
I was just thinking that, yeah, you and I have a pretty fun trip planned for around that time of the year, so...
Uh-oh.
So we'll see how that goes.
Yeah, we'll see if that our final episode is not, like, a week or two late.
Yeah.
Well, I'm looking forward to all of that, Adam, and in the meantime, we'll let Robs, our beloved producer, take it from here.
Thanks, Robs.
The Greatest Discovery is a Maximum Fun podcast hosted by Adam Pranica and Ben Harrison, and it's produced and edited by me, Rob Schulte. Our theme music is by Adam Ragusea. Head on over to MaximumFun.org/donate to support the ongoing production of our show. And a nice free way to support the show is to head on over to Apple Podcasts and give us a 5-star rating and review. You can find Ben on Twitter at BenjaminAHR, Adam is at CutForTime, and I'm at Rob K. Schulte. All right, thanks. We'll see you next time.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Listener supported.